Well, that was a Saturday. A lot happened. That was a Friday and a Saturday. Span of 48 hours. A lot going on in the world of K-State and the Big 12. But K-State did win a game. They're 2-0. And we have some positive news to report to you today on the status of one Skylar Thompson. That courtesy of the teleconference earlier today when Chris Klieman did speak. It is not a season-ending injury. We'll play the full audio about it. We don't have a timeline, but it is not expected to be a season-ending injury for Skylar Thompson. However, John Kurtz, Wyatt Thompson, Mitch Fortner with you, by the way, on Wildcat Insider. That certainly did really set the tone for what Saturday was and felt like. I mean, that was one of those moments that really sucked the air out of the stadium, seemed to suck some life out of the team, and turned into what was looking like a death spiral there. The team got it turned around and won the game. But, man, there was just a lot of emotions, I think, playing out on the field on Saturday.
I tried to think the rest of the weekend after doing television with Coach Klieman on Saturday night when I had done a game or how long it had been where I had seen anything like that that just took the juice away from the entire day, evening, whatever. It was just unbelievable. I said to him, I said, hey, I was down about it, and I, you know, you could probably tell it on the broadcast. And I think it's pretty obvious with all of the pictures out there on social media of Coach Klieman how emotional he was about it. So it's hard not to think that it didn't have, you know, an adverse effect on the football team. And clearly it did. But fortunately, they made some adjustments at halftime. Getting Daniel Green into the lineup in the second half certainly made loads and loads of difference. And so they found a way, right or wrong. That's. And I'm glad that this isn't a season-ending thing for Skylar. We don't know at this particular time how long it'll be, but that would have just been awful, simply stated. Awful.
It would have, and your mind was hard-pressed to go anywhere but that when you saw the reaction. I mean, it was two things. It was the fact that it was non-contact, and then the fact that his reaction was to put his hands over his helmet and have Chris Klieman there basically crying beside him and talking in kind of through his ear hole in the helmet. I mean, just those images were pretty powerful and pretty – you don't typically see that and think anything other than season-ending injury. And for a guy who had just come back after being knocked out in week three last year to have that happen now in week two, to have it happen on a play where he's basically trying to go lead block for his running back – you know, I mean, just the act that he was committing when the injury actually happened. It just, all of it was heartbreaking. It was absolutely heartbreaking.
Yeah, and I think it does say a lot about who Skylar Thompson is. You know, right or wrong, that's the way he has chosen to play the game. And he's, unfortunately for him, it was non-contact. It didn't look very good. And I think, in part, that's what led to just the emotion on his part, coach's part, the fans, all of us. It just was a stunning moment.
And then compounded later in the game by the struggles of Will Howard, too.
Sure.
You know, I mean, that obviously made it sink in more and had you feeling worse. Because there for a second, you know, I mean, he comes in, he finishes off the drive and punches the ball in, you know, from short range on a quarterback sneak. And then the next time K-State gets the ball, marches K-State right down the field.
Yeah.
Felt like, all right, well, this does look like a more improved Will Howard, which is what the coaches have been hyping up for a long time. And Chris Klieman called him after the Stanford game maybe the best backup quarterback in the country. And it's like, okay, we're rolling. Everything's good. And then just an avalanche hit you of 23 unanswered from Southern Illinois. And you were looking around wondering what exactly happened by the time you went into the locker room. So it was all of that really compounding together. It was the injury, how it happened, the emotion, and everything that you have with Skylar, combined with then the realization, like, okay, this could be another redo of last year. You know, you just had all these different waves hitting you throughout the day on Saturday.
Yeah, and the bottom line here in talking about the turnovers, against a quality team, regardless of what you think of the level in which Southern Illinois plays, they do play pretty good football. And they have, I believe the number is 17 super seniors. It is a good quality team that I believe will not only vie for a playoff spot, but probably will do pretty well in the playoffs, all things being equal, if they stay healthy. I think they are well coached. Once they got an opportunity, couldn't you just feel them feeling it?
Yes.
I know I could. And give them some credit, too. This, you know, there are always two teams out there, and I thought they did a really nice job of taking advantage of some mistakes and seizing on it in a big way and turning the game in their favor, at least for a while.
Absolutely. And that was the other part that was very maddening about the way everything played out and didn't feel fair about the Skyler injury is that K-State came out pretty sharp. I mean, that was a team that I think they were right to hype up the way that they did. That's a good team, top 10 FCS team. And you had them down 14-0. I guess it was 7-0 when Skyler got hurt, but very shortly after, it's 14-0. You're driving in to score. The defense had looked pretty good. I mean, everything was really flowing in the right direction. Even then, when Will's in the game, it's 21-3, and you just felt like, all right, like if Skyler wouldn't have gotten hurt, it felt like that was headed toward being a 30-40-point K-State win, which would have been really impressive and given you a ton of momentum heading into Nevada.
Yeah, that's absolutely right. And, you know, it goes from 21-3 to 23-21 just so quickly. it just kind of fuzzies up your mind, you know. It's like, oh, my God, what's going on here? And fortunately, they were able to kind of settle down some. And I'm sure there are lots of emotions and feelings about, you know, between now and if and when Skyler comes back, what happens to this football team based on quarterback play. And I'm just going to give you my opinion. I do believe Will Howard is a better football player than you saw on Saturday night. I've thought about this most of the weekend too. I think no matter what you say, to be forced into that situation, even though that's how you're trained as a backup quarterback, you know, the number two guy, you're a play away from being in there. Again, we spent 5 minutes talking about the emotion of everybody else. Wouldn't common sense tell you that it probably affected Will a little bit too? It would in my mind.
I think so too, and I think it was clear that, to me, now I'm not in between his ears. I don't know what was going
on
up there.
Please understand, I'm not trying to make excuses for the way he played. What I appreciate about Will, among many things, is that what did he do after the game? He went right to post-game press and answered every question like he always does and manned up and said, I've got to be better. To me, that's the kind of guy you want to be around a little bit. Don't you think?
He did, and he had to do it a bunch last year. Obviously, that, you know, the end of the year last year was not fun for anybody, and he was always there answering the questions as well. And I tried to make sure after the game to get that out on Twitter and let everybody know, and I know everybody's angry and, you know, et cetera, et cetera.
Well,
and
sure.
I'll play you. Like, we've got the audio. We'll get in depth on Will. I'll play you the audio of what it is that he had to say. But I did. I appreciated that. He came into postgame. He did stand up there for 10 minutes and answer every question that came his way, and none of those were particularly fun questions really to answer. So he does deserve credit for that. I think to me it seemed like he did get – it just took the one mistake, right? He came out there and played almost flawlessly for that first drive. It was a 10-play, 56-yard touchdown drive. Looked good. Everything was fine. Hit a couple of nice throws. And then once the pick six happened, and then it's compounded by – And this is one thing I will say in Will Howard's defense. You know, I mean, we hear a lot about, and I'm not trying to single him out either. It's just it was a bad play. Noah Johnson got basically run over, and he's the leader of the offensive line, and all of a sudden there's a guy right there. And I think a lot of quarterbacks would fumble in that same scenario, and then that turns into a huge play. And then now you're talking about back-to-back plays that have gone disastrously wrong on consecutive possessions, and it did seem like that bothered him, and then it obviously, you know, up in the where they're calling the plays, Courtney Messingham, they kind of just went into a shell and were like, hey, let's just get the ball to Deuce and get out of here. Mm-hmm. So it was just, I think everything compounded on itself and made it look worse than it may actually have been. But you still did almost lose the game. So, I mean, I understand the frustration. I understand the fear that everybody has right now.
Two sides to every coin always. And I want to just stress, I'm not trying to make excuses for Will Howard in any way. He went through a stretch there where things were pretty rugged. But I'm just saying, I think under different circumstances, he has a chance to be better. He probably is pretty aware that he will be the quarterback this week, and I think the preparation is always good for him. He is a very – I've said this before, even before the scenario that he was put in Saturday night, that he's been through a lot in a very short period of time. He has some toughness to him, both mentally and physically, and I think that the team will probably rally around him a little bit better than they did the other night. They, you know, I think they did in the second half a little bit better, sure, no question about that. But the end of that first half was rough for everybody. Period, end of story.
Yeah, I mean, look, exemplified by the fact that one of the things that happened was Deuce Vaughn fumbled for the first time since his sophomore year of high school.
Yeah, and it was the much like the thing with Noah, just an odd deal. I mean, you saw the ball squirt straight back like that. I mean, it just rarely happens. He's probably, knock on wood, as good with ball security as anybody that I've watched for a while. Wouldn't you agree?
Yeah, yes. Yeah. I mean, 100%, and it says evidenced by that. It was fascinating. He got asked postgame, when was the last time he fumbled? And he was going back through his head. He's like, well, it wasn't my senior year of high school. I don't think it was my junior year. I think it was my sophomore year of high school. And it's like, okay, I mean, that's...
Well, that's all you need to know.
It's crazy.
Yeah.
So we're talking about Noah Johnson, who, you know, everybody just raves and raves about on the offensive line, and Deuce Vaughn being two guys that had plays that, you know, really adversely affected the team. That's not something that happens very often. And I can understand if you're a young quarterback out there again looking around and being like, well, I made a mistake, and now we've got the two leaders here that are out here on offense,
sure,
the guys that never make mistakes, making mistakes. I mean, I would just speculate that that's
some to the consternation, doesn't it?
Yes. I think that's some of the psyche of what went on there. Now, I understand you would come back and say, well, it doesn't matter. You have to fight through that. And yes, that's absolutely true. But after the game, I mean, on this point, Chris Kleiman said he did feel like the guys were a bit shell-shocked as a team.
Potentially. You know, as good a player as he is and as much time and effort and stuff as he's put into to getting himself back to playing, and you know, he's really the voice of the team, he and Noah Johnson, that absolutely, I think that was that's the adversity we have to overcome, and we had to overcome it today, and it struggled, we struggled for a while to overcome it, but we did overcome it and got a win. And so, you know, we'll pray that the kid gets good news, but you know, looks like for the foreseeable future we got to go with Will, and Will will be ready to play.
And I apologize there. Obviously, he's referring to Skyler. The question was everybody a bit shell-shocked by Skyler's injury? So that was the context there of that response from Kleiman.
Yeah, and it's obvious the answer is certainly so. Injuries do happen in the game, but I think the circumstance of what happened last year and just the way that happened was just, I mean, it just pulled on everybody's heartstrings, to be honest. Didn't it?
It
did in my mind.
It did.
Yeah.
We will we'll play the audio from the teleconference today. Chris Kleiman's full thoughts on Skylar Thompson, the full update. As I mentioned, it is not believed to be season ending, so there is the good news, but we'll play you the full quote from Chris Kleiman coming up next here on Wildcat Insider. Well, in a roundabout way, this is some K-State news. Clay Helton fired at USC after he was down 42-13 at one point to Stanford on Saturday, who, of course, struggled to score anything against K-State in Week 1. I think there are a lot of things to take from that. One, I think there's a little bit of comfort in that if you're a K-State fan and how soundly K-State beat Stanford, and then Stanford turned around and did that. I think, two, it probably helped that Stanford decided to go with the clearly superior option at quarterback. Three, college football is wacky, and four, yeah, USC does have some problems. But man, I'm surprised to see that USC pulled the trigger there. It's like when you see that, you just, Clay Helton's been under fire for a long time. Clearly, USC has not been very happy with him. Why not just do it in the off season? I don't like why do you wait until week two and then pull the trigger here? I don't understand.
I don't really get that one at all. Yes, I'm sure there's disappointment after the loss to Stanford. I get that part. And I'm like you. I thought you said a lot there in a very short, succinct, quality way. If you're unhappy with the guy, fire him in the offseason, which I think is what they wanted to do anyway.
Yes, that
and
clearly,
they just didn't do it.
Yes, that clearly is what they wanted to do.
Yeah.
And they just didn't pull the trigger.
Crazy.
So, okay, well... Yeah, I don't know. I saw the jokes. I saw Max Olson tweeting, well, we found out that K-State Stanford was the ultimate body clock game. You know, I understand that.
I guess I just don't understand. Maybe it's my K-State bias or their lack of respect for K-State's program or somewhere in between, I don't know. But aren't you going to give K-State any credit at all for defending them the way they did?
It's frustrating because I saw a lot of people nationally out there just making the statement like, oh, remember, this is the same Stanford team that only scored 7 points, whatever it was, that only scored one touchdown, 7 points against K-State the week before. And it was, I was always kind of like, okay, yes, I know I've got some bias there being the K-State fan. But it was frustrating because you know the context of that is kind of like, look, these guys couldn't score more than 7 points against these chumps last week, and now they've got 42 on USC. So yes, that was definitely frustrating.
I guess I just don't quite get it. It just is hard for me to put that into proper context. Again, every game matchup is different. How many years have you been following the game? And then I'll ask you this question after you think about it in your mind. How many times have you heard a coach say, most teams' best improvement is from week 1 to week 2? And you said another thing key to, going with Tanner McKee, monster. All of their fans, that's the guy they wanted all along, not Jack West. And there are reasons for that. He's a more talented player, more upside. I'm not the coach. I'm not sitting here railing on Coach Shaw, which it probably sounds like I'm doing. But he made a decision to not do the two quarterback thing, and you saw what happened.
Yeah. Yeah, I think in hindsight, I would imagine he would have rather just made a decision, gone with it, and stuck with it. But maybe David Shaw would come and say, hey, we needed to do that to light a fire under Tanner McKee, and clearly it worked in week two.
Yeah.
Maybe so. Either way, Clay Helton is out at USC. That's not going to help him out at all. So condolences, I suppose, to Clay Helton for that. We'll see what happens at SC. Okay, I told you we'd get you the audio from Chris Klieman on Skylar Thompson. We have reiterated once again today, if you're just joining us, Chris Klieman says it will not be a season-ending injury for Skylar Thompson, but he will be out indefinitely. And here was the exact wording in full from Klieman on the teleconference.
Skyler's going to be out indefinitely. We don't believe it to be a season-ending injury, which is what I know I feared on Saturday, is that he would be lost for the season. We don't feel it to be that way, but it's going to be some time. I can't tell you how long, but he's going to be out indefinitely as we continue to get more information. And I know we had an MRI yesterday, and confirm some things that we'll keep in-house, but he'll be out indefinitely.
All things considered, that's wonderful, wonderful news based on the way everybody was feeling on Saturday.
Yeah.
You still have to figure out something in the short term, and we don't know how short and or long term that is going to be. But for Skyler's sake, first of all, to not have his career end on that note, it's wonderful news. And I think for the team's sake, too, because I think you and I believe that Will Howard is a better player than what he showed out there on Saturday, but you also, just like last year, can very quickly see the things that Skyler does bring to the table and the difference that he makes with the offense. And that's another point that I will make here. I know this isn't everybody's favorite point because Skyler is a pretty polarizing player and it's led to some frustration over his career with some of the ups and downs. But I also think he does not get enough credit for the knowledge of the offense and the fact that he generally takes care of the ball pretty well. And you can just see how quickly some of those things that aren't sexy go by the wayside and how much that changes the offense and the potential of the team when he is gone. And we've now experienced that 2 years in a row.
Well, you said a bunch there too, John. And I go back to numbers, and you've got basically 37 games played by one and 10 – now 11, I guess 10 by Will. That's a pretty significant difference. And I think when you listen to the coaches talk about Will Howard, they glowingly talk about all of the things that have the potential to make him a really good football player. You can't rush games played. It just kind of has to happen. And I know that is an obvious statement. But again, I do think that he is a guy that is going to play better than he played the other night, and we'll see if that happens. This is going to we'll talk about Nevada more later in the program, but this is an opportunity for Will, and he knows, at least the way I see it, that right now this is his football team, so go get her done. I think we'll see his best efforts.
Well, and that part was also reiterated on the teleconference today too, because a follow-up question that I think was fair came up about, hey, like is Will the guy that's taking all the number one reps at quarterback now? And sure. I know, like, I mean, I saw it on my Twitter timeline, people wondering, most people jump straight to Jake Rubley as opposed to Jaren Lewis, who is actually the next in line at quarterback. But Rubley has the four stars next to his name coming out of high school, so I get it. But look, right now, it's going to be Will Howard. That was reiterated here by Kleiman.
Will's the guy right now that will continue on and take the lion's share of those reps, and then we'll get Jaren Lewis ready, and for sure. And Jaren's taken a lot of reps and done a really good job throughout fall camp. And then we'll bring one of the young guys up from the scout team. We're still kind of debating back and forth to who's going to be that third guy based on an injury or so, but that's kind of where we're at right now.
So no Jake Rubley even mentioned there. He obviously would be one of those that they are considering, I'm sure, bringing up for that third spot in the depth chart there that he's referring to at the end. But I mean, I'll just say this. I don't know that I have a ton of insight into Jaren Lewis and what he is and why you've certainly seen him a lot more than I have and could fill in some of those gaps. But on Rubley, I just know it was very apparent the two open practices, one that we saw in the spring and one that we saw here in the fall, he looks like he is behind the other quarterbacks. He definitely looked like he was behind Howard and Lewis, just in terms of size, stature, and where his ability and knowledge of everything is at right now. I mean, he just looked like a true freshman that I will emphasize this, and I don't think I can emphasize it enough. He basically did not get a senior year of high school. So, yes, he's very highly touted. A lot of people thought very highly of his ability, but he missed his senior year because he was in Colorado where they weren't going to have a season.
Because of COVID.
Yeah. So he transfers to a school in Iowa where he played, I think, just one or maybe two games and was ruled ineligible and missed the rest of the season.
Yeah.
So not only does he basically get zero game experience, but he also had to up and move and go somewhere else to a new team. It just all things that can stunt your development. So combine that with the fact that he is young, and there are a lot of four-star freshmen that go to bigger-name schools and come in and are in the exact same spot that Rubley is at. There's just not as much pressure and expectation on them because those schools are more used to having quarterbacks like that.
Yeah.
Right? Like, we're not used to it around here, and so the expectations have been built for a long time. So I think everybody just expects him to be ready to go right away.
Yeah, and every situation is different. I mean, year to year even. Think about C.J. Stroud at Ohio State. He's not going to walk in there every year and start, bang, just out of the gate. It just doesn't work like that very often. And in staying with the same theme here with the games played and the experience between Skyler and Will, and then Will and the others, Will has 10 games in. Rubley, Lewis, and Marsh together have zero. But the difference between those three is that Jaren has been here an extra year. And like Will, has a really good feel for the offense. He's gotten more confident. He's gotten bigger and stronger. Some believe he has as good an arm as anybody on the football team. That says a lot. I think he's probably going to be the number two quarterback for the foreseeable or near future. Maybe just simply stated.
He is somebody that I've heard.
I would be shocked if he isn't, let's put it that way.
Well, I've heard the statement made, and I can't remember if it was Colin Klein back in spring. Somebody in spring ball said that he had the best arm talent on the team. So, yeah, that is something that we have heard about Jaren Lewis, that he
also can run.
Yeah, that he is pretty athletic and has a really good arm. I think I would imagine it's just, you know, the little things we talk about with Skyler that need to be improved upon for him to really work his way up. And, I mean, say what you will, take some of it with a grain of salt, but the coaching staff has very consistently talked up Will Howard quite a bit. They clearly really like him. So I don't know. I don't know what to tell you beyond that as far as, like, hey, why not try to go to Jaren? They won the game with Will in there, and he did hit a big throw late to Phillip Brooks to help them do it.
Right.
I don't know how quick the hook would be, how short the leash would be before they would try out Jaren Lewis, but it seemed pretty apparent to me they thought that they could get out of there with a win on Saturday just with Will in the game, and they did. They were right. So now you move on and regroup and see what happens this week.
Yeah. And with that said, you do have to get that second guy, and I believe it will be Jaron, ready to go, because much like what we saw the other night, you're not very far away from being the guy again, or for the first time in this particular case. But again, the fact that he was here and had a redshirt season and then, you know, didn't play the first year and then redshirt, and he's a redshirt sophomore now, so it's basically his third year in the system. That says a lot, you know. Even though games played, it's still zero in that column. So, yeah, this hurts the team with Skyler's injury. There's no doubt about that. And how does it affect the team mentally in preparation for this week? I do think they have some time to, you know, have a better opportunity for success based on if you compare it to the 30 seconds after Skyler goes down and now you're going again.
They did win at TCU in the first game that Will Howard started last year.
Yeah. So his first two starts, actually.
Yeah. You're right. Yeah. You're right. Before things did go downhill the rest of the year. All right. Well, we'll talk more about the quarterbacks here throughout the show. And I know I got a lot of Twitter questions. If you want to get yours in at JL Kurtz or at the game KMAN, you can get questions and we'll try to get to some of those here on the show. But I do want to talk about the Big 12. Four teams added. The league seems more solidified, but yet in the immediate aftermath of that, we did have some chirping coming from Lawrence, Kansas, about the state of the league. We'll talk about that coming up next. Back on Wildcat Insider, John Kurtz, Wyatt Thompson, Mitch Portner, all with you. If you have a question, tweet it. The game KMAN or at JL Kurtz. We'll try to get to some of those. We have a bunch today because there is a lot going on, including the Big 12 adding four schools. And, you know, that happened Friday. We couldn't even go... I won't even say we couldn't even go 24 hours. We couldn't go... The last press conference got over at about 4 o'clock Central Time. And by 7 o'clock Central Time, we had these quotes out there from Travis Goff, the athletic director at Kansas, that were saying basically Kansas would not stop itself from having conversations with other leagues in light of the news. So we made it a grand total of like maybe 2.5 hours with some perceived unity within the conference after adding four new schools to the league. And very frustrating. Here is what Travis Goff had to say. This story comes from Jesse Newell in the Kansas City Star, Wichita Eagle. So Kansas Athletic Director Travis Goff said, Friday was clearly a good day for the Big 12. Okay, so that is a quote. But he remained noncommittal when it came to KU's potentially pursuing other leagues in the future. It says, Goff was asked whether Friday's Big 12 news potentially stops other conversations while pursuing what's best for KU. He said, quote, no. The beauty of it is, when you think about being focused on what's best for Kansas, that applies to anything we do, and then, look, the rest of it's just a bunch of mumbo-jumbo. The important part there is the first word, which is no. He went on to also say, what's best for Kansas doesn't change regardless of conference discussion or speculation. It's still what's best for KU, and it still puts us in the most positive, strengthened position we can be in the league we're in, most importantly, and for all the unknowns that are out there. He said... Now, I understand why he'd say this. He's the athletic director at the school, right? But he says, I think Kansas has as much or more potential as any other Power 5 athletics program in the country. So that's where we're focused. And then made a comment about the financial security of the league and said, quote, we're less secure now than we were 8 weeks ago and maybe significantly financially less secure. The facts are there's most likely a scenario where when we do a new deal with a makeup where we likely can't stay at the level we're at, and I think that's pretty well documented. That shouldn't be a surprise to anybody, the value and that OU and Texas brought. So a little bit of grumbling about the financial situation the league is in from the worst Power 5 football program and one of the worst decade-long stretches that we've ever seen in the sport. So that's a lot there to digest from Goff. Now, I will just say I do understand, I think in large part, what he is doing, which is he's got to appease a fan base that is extremely arrogant and thinks that they belong certainly in the Big Ten or the ACC and that they're frankly above what the new Big 12 is going to be. And I don't think that's one of those statements. Like, I don't even think Kansas fans would really argue that. I think I could say that to a Kansas fan, like, you guys are arrogant enough to think you're better than this league, and they would generally say yes. I don't think anybody would argue with that. And so you've got an athletic director that's brand new and knows that he has to appease those fans.
I think there's something to that, certainly. How much? I don't know that I would know that, but I think your thought is a good one. and he is, at the end of the day, his job is to do what's best for the University of Kansas Athletic Department, and I think he will do that. Does that mean they're going to run off to the Big Ten or the ACC? Haven't seen him being invited yet. I'm just being honest about that. And I think his comments, right, wrong, or indifferent, maybe surprise some of the other athletic directors around not only the Big 12, but the country. Agreed?
Yeah, I would agree.
I think most people were a little bit surprised by it, but so be it. Those comments, though, I believe probably took away a little bit of the talk of what the league is going to add, whether it's football or full athletic departments. I think that was, and I don't know if it's right, wrong, or indifferent, but I believe that's the way it played out. Agree with that?
Yeah, I do.
Yeah.
I do. I mean, how many
here's the thing, too, and I just have to say this. This is a no-brainer statement, but hey, it needs to be said at this point. Losing Oklahoma and Texas sucks. Period. End of story. They're both national brands, whether you like them or hate them. Fact. It is a fact of life. With that said, life goes on. You must move on. And I think under the current circumstances, the four that have been added can potentially bring a lot. I do believe that. I don't know if the four added means the league is done. We had a commissioner say, not sure about that yet, right? But I do, at the end of the day, I think the back to the comments of Travis Goff, these grant of rights coming up won't be forever. It'll be for a period of time. And I think as if this league proves out to be successful on a national level, things can change, just like they changed 7 weeks ago.
Well, so that will be the interesting part here, and I haven't heard a lot of discussion about this, but yet the present TV contract will be up at the end of the 2024 football season. Obviously, it goes through the end of the 25 athletic season. But, you know, with that, you're talking about probably 2 years from now signing a new TV deal, or at least starting negotiations for that.
Certainly that part.
So,
no question about that.
At that point, you are going to be talking about a new grant of rights for these current schools. And if this attitude at Kansas persists, I mean, are they going to sign a grant of rights? Like, what's happening there? Because I've even seen the suggestion, and I know how asinine this seems, but the suggestion among Kansas fans that they would have some sort of provision in the grant of rights, they would get some sort of special treatment there in the grant of rights to not have to sign all of their rights away, which the grant of rights being that the league gets the rights to the money for your televised home games. What is Kansas going to do? Like, it's one thing to posture right now and say all of this when you're trying to appease fans or whatever theory you want to throw out there. They're trying to raise money. They're worried about raising money for a new football stadium or covering an $80 million exit fee, whatever it might be. Will you put your name on the dotted line for a new grant of rights, or are you going to hold out at that point? And then what happens if they're not willing to? You know, I mean, I think that's going to be the interesting part to see how this plays out over the next couple of years.
Yeah, there's so much to that. And I think moving forward, who knows how this will play out and how the landscape of everything around the, quote, new Big 12 will be, because I think we're in for lots of change. I don't know that you're going to see the other Power Five conferences change much, but I don't know that they won't either. Stand by. It's going to get interesting.
Yeah.
On a lot of levels.
Yeah.
And because of what has happened, it's I don't even know how to describe the boulders rolling downhill, where you have conferences like the American and the Mountain West and others, Sun Belt, name the league, looking at, well, what are we going to do? Are we going to do anything? Are we going to add? So somebody just threw a big old rock in the water, and the ripples are moving.
Yeah.
At some point, but it's going to be a while, it'll start to calm down again.
I mean, the frustrating part of it is it's like you were hoping that was going to calm down, and now You know, we had the Kansas comments, and then the Fort Worth Star-Telegram puts out a story saying that TCU and Houston were very close to getting Pac-12 offers, and Mac Engel, who's the columnist that wrote it, was saying, like, hey, don't be surprised if this happens in the future, and it's just like, okay, so we're all going to still be on edge to a degree, it sounds like, even with all of this happening. All right, there was other Big 12 football played this weekend, and two eggs laid by the conference. We'll discuss those coming up next. So Iowa State goes down 27-17 to Iowa. Brock Purdy threw three picks and got benched. And Texas lost 40-21 at Arkansas. At one point was down, what would that have been? Four touchdowns to Arkansas in that game. A team that's been I think it's kind to call Arkansas a middling SEC program with where they've been the last 5 to 10 years, basically since they left the Cotton Bowl after beating K-State in 2011.
Right.
Not a great weekend overall for the Big 12, I would say. You also had Oklahoma State still struggling. Obviously, K-State had its struggles. Texas Tech struggled with Stephen F. Austin. TCU did beat Cal, but I kind of expected more from TCU in that game as well. But really, the headlines are Iowa State and Texas both lose. Two teams that were ranked in the top 15 for the league, and they got thumped. They both got thumped.
Well, for my money, the numbers stick out for me this way with Texas at Arkansas. Arkansas rushed for 333 yards. Texas had 256 yards of total offense, and they're going back to Thompson to quarterback this
week. Yeah, and they've already made a knee-jerk quarterback change.
I don't get that either. TCU, you mentioned them. they were pretty fortunate in a lot of ways. They trailed for a large part of that game. And then I do have to say this, John. I picked Iowa. I think they're a really good team. I'm pretty sure they're a top 10 team. Don't know that it's a crime for Iowa State to lose to them, even at home. But right now, the expectations there are so astronomically high, people just feel like probably the way the Ohio State Buckeye fans feel today. Nobody saw that one coming.
No.
Or at least I didn't.
No, and it's the way Iowa State lost too. I mean, they got handled. And you've got four combined turnovers from your two studs, Brock Purdy and Breece Hall, turned it over four times.
Mm-hmm. When you play a team that is ranked 10th and you turn it over four times even at home, I don't know what the odds are that you're going to lose, but I'm going to guess it's better than 50-50.
Yeah, which look, K-State turned it over four times at home as well and won, but it's a little bit different deal when you're playing Iowa. But the amazing part of this is, and I'm trying to find the full box score here. Give me 1 second. So, do you know how many total yards Iowa had in scoring 27 points and completely dominating Iowa State?
Honestly, I don't.
173.
Really?
Iowa dominated Iowa State with 173 total yards of offense.
That doesn't even sound right, does it?
That's amazing, yeah. And it's because of the turnovers. And it's like, I've been beating that drum for a long time. I felt like Iowa State was a top 15 to 20 team. I did not think they were a top 10 team. I thought the hype had drifted too far, and a lot of it centered around, I don't think Brock Purdy is as good as a lot of people think or thought that he was, and he winds up getting benched, and Hunter Deckers is playing quarterback by the end of the game. Anyway, we'll give you more on the latest on Skylar Thompson's health next.